This is Dolphinville Radio, brought to you by Photon.net, your internet service provider. Dolphinville Radio, welcome. Begin our broadcast of the Dolphinville Radio Show.
All right.
Welcoming my guests, Isaac George and Lynn Patterson, recently joined in a ceremony of sacred properties from Scotland. And welcome you here to Dolphinville. We're sitting overlooking Kealakekua Bay, the gateway of the gods, and we have been blessed, to be sure. Today on the Dolphin Coast, we spent an infinity of time, tasted what it was like beyond time and space, in the company of the sweetest, most wonderful family of dolphins, and we're welcomed with open arms. So I'm welcoming you with open arms, and we're in that dolphin energy. So,
thank you, Douglas.
Yeah, here we are in Dolphinville.
In Dolphin
Very
Eye.
Pleased to be here.
Yeah, so we came from Scotland. It was halfway around the world. It's basically about 10, 11 hours away.
Well, Scotland seems to be the hotbed for places to go to investigate the ancient energies and spiritual practices that are that seem to be capturing everyone's interest right now.
Right.
Why would you say that's going on?
I think for one particular book in, to mention is The Da Vinci Code, because it brought a lot of attention to parts of Britain, but in particular the areas near Edinburgh and Rosslyn, which is where the Rosslyn Chapel is, where the book ends.
Right.
So that's created a lot of interest in things of Scottish lore. Going back just about 5-6 years, the movie Braveheart also awakened people's awarenesses about William Wallace and the fight for freedom against the English rule. But Scotland also has a wealth of mysticism, and the ancient pre-Christian Celtic Church existed there. Very strong legends that are just coming to light now that Mary Magdalene actually spent some time there, if not ended her days there, that Joseph of Arimathea brought the young Jesus as a boy at age 12 to meet with the Druidic elders in places like Glen Lyon and the Isle of Iona on the Western Isles. So there's a lot of, more than magic, just a deep spiritual sacred connection to the earth, the planet, you know, the earth there, the land there, and the people.
One of the things I've noticed that people now, because there's so much information available, we're re-examining the so-called folklores of primitives and indigenous peoples, and finding some interesting connections between, you know, what the Aboriginals were perceiving as part of the reality versus what some of the Indian folklores and Middle Eastern folklores, and obviously the Scottish Isles are filled with, you know, very steeped in legend, and seems to be having a tradition of maintaining the legends with song and story. Isn't that correct? Growing up in Scotland, did you share a lot of stories over there, Lynn?
Well, I didn't actually grow up there. I moved there from England when I was about 12.
Forgive me.
I think, really, you just take it for granted when you're living in a place. And sometimes it takes somebody new to come along to open your eyes to it, because there's a connectedness that goes very deep with me with Scotland that sometimes it takes an outsider to come along, like Isaac, or new friends that I meet that make me realise how deeply connected I am with it. But, yeah, the more I read into it and connect with places I haven't been to in Scotland yet already, the more I realise just how deeply rooted it is in the land. You know, reading stories about what the Druids did and how they worshipped the land, and it's sacred. Absolutely.
Well, you introduced me to a lot of the like the stone circles in and around Kilmartin and in the Argyle region, and introduced me to things that predate anything. There was a megalithic period going back 2,500, 5,000 years. And in fact, you know, it was quite a thrill to be in the presence of, could be one of the oldest living things, if not the oldest living thing on the planet, the yew tree at Fortingall. And it's 5,000 years old.
A tree, 5,000 years old.
Yeah.
That's extraordinary.
Yeah, it's.
And what kind of tree is this?
Yew, Y-E-W, and yew trees are known to grow to about an age of 400 or 500 years, then seemingly die and then regenerate themselves. But this is the oldest. This is the granddaddy of all yew.
Regenerate
themselves. Yeah, regenerate themselves and start growing again.
Itself. Wow.
Yeah. So they're considered by the. By the old Druids and the megalithic peoples like the Picts in Scotland, revered this tree for its eternal nature, type of tree. Mm-hmm. So when the Christians came along, they saw that as a symbol of resurrection and renewal.
Mm-hmm.
And so things like that have deep meaning to the people and, you know, fund a lot of the legends and stories.
Well, now you went over there with some knowledge and a connection to the land through Lynn, which was obviously a heart connection, because just over a year ago, you two met here in Hawaii, the other side of the planet.
Yeah, exactly.
Bring us into that. First of all, Izzy, just tell us what got you to Hawaii as briefly as possible.
Okay.
We need the long edition, but starting about 10 years ago, you had some major shifts in your life and have brought you up to where you are now.
Right. Well, I had been basically working as in the music industry, music retail industry, and have always had kind of an unusual life where it seems like the more I tried to delve into normal society and business world, every so often I just felt like some spiritual event would happen in my life and knock me back. 1994 was the granddaddy of those, got me back on the path kind of thing, and I had gone through a particularly tough couple of 3 years. My mother passed away and so forth, and the marriage was kind of challenging to me, and I had no direction in life. And in early 94, in the very first month of 1994, I went through an experience, a spontaneous awakening, if you will, that was triggered by an encounter with one person, but I can't even credit that person with the totality of it because of the astrology at the time. And I was just...
And you called that a kundalini rising?
I was a kundalini awakening, a spontaneous awakening. I didn't even know what to call it until I had run into that information in a book by Stanislav Grof. Dr. Grof described various states of spiritual awakening and emergence or emergency in a book called Stormy Search for the Self. So I didn't have the roadmap until I was well through almost 2 years of this experience.
Well, sometimes that's better, because like trying to figure out certain board games like Go, until you've played Go,
you don't know
until you play Go.
But my internal guidance was very much present from the very beginning and kept me from kind of going over the deep end, you know, anywhere along the way. And I relied on that to steer me through, you know, months of counseling. Some therapeutic counseling.
So kind of a death experience.
Yeah, rebirth.
Totally let go of the old. And then when did the channeling of Archangel Ariel and other entities start coming through?
Well,
was that spontaneous? Or
That was pretty much spontaneous. I wasn't looking for anything like that. And it was actually just 5 months after the beginning of this experience, sitting in just meditation. At that time, I was meditating, you know, 2-3 times a day at an hour a clip.
Wow.
And had all of a sudden a spontaneous experience 3 days before my birthday with this this visual experience in my third eye, if you will, of this incredibly powerfully feminine presence with flowing copper red hair and, you know, just this blast of energy and light just coming right into my brain, it seemed like, and saying, "I am Ariel," and I had never heard the name before in my life.
Wow.
Other than, you know, the former defense minister of Israel in the 1980s, who's now the prime minister. And I just never heard the name before. This energy just blasted me with love, and I was just like,
did you get an angelic presence when you saw this energy?
Definitely.
So wings,
no
mistake. Metaphoric wings, if you will,
energy wings. Energy wings. It wasn't like fluffy wings and feathery wings.
No.
It was just like a huge energy that just enveloped me and just embraced me as if I was a long lost lover. And I did. I felt like incredibly blissed for the 3 days up till my birthday, my 44th birthday.
Wow.
And I had just pretty much concluded, oh, this has got to be my guardian angel, and wow, that's cool. And all of a sudden, this guidance was telepathically with me every waking moment. But it was right after that event, though, the kundalini awakening deepened into a new level.
Okay.
And
reverberated, you know, so to speak.
Physical reactions became more pronounced, like some of the symptoms are like waking up in the middle of the night and all of a sudden your whole body goes through a spasm, like somebody had run an electrical charge through you and almost throws you off the bed or onto the floor. These things normally would have probably scared the heck out of me, but they didn't feel awful. They felt ecstatic. They were amazing.
Well, I think we have to be ready for ecstasy in different levels, you know, and we introduced it to our bodies in different ways, different disciplines. I know even martial arts is a way of introducing levels of ecstasy through discipline that you can tolerate it.
Mm-hmm.
And the old folklores that are part of our tradition in the Judeo-Christian, Greco-Roman tradition, of course, we go back to Delphi, and this is one of the king of all myths for me, where the woman was the only one who could actually tolerate the intensity of the energy, so to speak, that was coming through.
Exactly.
Men would die.
It was too,
and because it was not a level of, it was a level of ecstasy that they could take that men could.
The women had the frequency to hold the frequency. Mm-hmm. They had it inherently.
Why a woman would just be able to contain that flow of energy.
Mm.
Yeah,
I think it's all to do with feeling.
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
How much can you contain the feeling? Yeah.
It's overwhelming. Feeling and the intuition. You know, it's all right brain stuff that enables you to connect. You know, and just it's the whole point of being, the whole sense of being. I think that's why the priestesses of Delphi were the ones who would intuit and see into the future, prophesize what was going to happen. But even that, to my understanding, was done with not just on their own, but it was done with a connection with an ET type of presence, with another race, not a human race.
Right.
That's my past life experience of that, anyway.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, dolphins have often been called extraterrestrials because they're not of the land.
Mm-hmm. Well, you asking about my, you know, the channeling experience very much prepared me for. In one sense, having that, so basically, it wasn't until 1998 that I fully allowed, or shall we say, cooperated with, obviously, in my life path to be a channel, not only for Archangel Ariel, but briefly and in different times, Saint Germain and Yeshua and some of the other archangelic presences. But it was only a year after that beginning of that Kundalini awakening that the channeling of, or the experience of the cetaceans came to me in much the same manner as Ariel did. And so it was gangbusters type of experience to all of a sudden experience the dolphins in their extraterrestrial habitat in the system, the Sirius system. And that's where I was taken to for, it was on 5 minutes in Earth time, but it was a
Jodie Foster in Contact,
exactly.
The blink of an eye, and 18 hours elapsed.
Yeah, and it was a huge experience that really kind of reopened the connection to that link that's in my being, my spiritual and human DNA. So.
Right. Now, what was your experience about that time? Say 10 years ago, 15 years
in
ago.
In the 1980s, I was giving it my best shot to live a normal human life. I got married when I was about 25 or 26, I was doing my best to be human, married, do the job bit and the career bit and all the rest of it. Mm-hmm. And
well, what rocked your world to the extent where you started to look at it differently?
I went on holiday I'd always been interested in other alternative stuff, always, and there were bits and pieces that came to me in my life, and I never had really, like a lot of us, I'd never really felt at home here. And
here on the planet.
Here on the planet. Uh-huh. And quite frankly, I just couldn't wait to leave. Except I had this inner knowing, this feeling of, well, it's not really going to be a good idea to go try and go home then, because you're just going to get sent straight back again. So you might as well see it out this time.
So your first awakening to spirit was, let me out of here.
I don't think I've ever been unawake. I've just not been aware of being awake.
Right.
I went on holiday to Greece with a friend.
Greece.
And I just had an experience. We met some guys over there, and I made a connection that just completely jolted me out of my reality.
Stopped your world.
Yeah. I had never thought that I would, I'd never really met anybody that I really loved. I've never met anybody that really did that for me, set my lights flashing, fireworks and all the rest of it, and this person did.
Wow.
And I got back, and I just couldn't connect with my husband. And about 3 days later, I just left. I left the relationship. And I moved out of the house, and he couldn't understand it. He couldn't understand it, but I...
Do something else.
The growth pattern that I experienced was very similar to Lynn's. I went through a 3-year gestation of why am I in this marriage from the time I... and then, this person who I met literally, they had the same experience that Lynn had in Greece, and but it was right in my backyard.
Right,
and
right.
Just blew the top off.
I'm sure.
Amazing.
How can I fall in love like that?
Yeah, you cannot go back.
Yeah.
It's more than just a relationship or some infatuation. You know the difference between teenage infatuation and something like this, because it just turns your world upside down.
Stops your world as well, that belief system.
Well, right now there's basically two realities tracking each other in parallel.
Okay, the parallel universes.
And there is like a parallel, and it's also a Ariel likes to call situations like this the potential for a parallel collapse or a parallel merge.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we're going through a parallel collapse. And especially, right now with all the stuff around the Divine Feminine and the Da Vinci Code and questioning the deeply held and sacredly acknowledged beliefs of the Church and all that is it's all being uprooted and upended. And so I think what we're seeing is that we're tracking along one feeling that feels truer and more healthy, if you will. Part of that health comes from observing essentially an alien species like the cetaceans and going, well, why does it work so well for them?
Mm-hmm.
And then looking at the dysfunction within the so-called normal society mm-hmm. live stream, that parallel, where either you're severely medicated or you're seeing your shrink twice a week, or if you can't afford that, then you're caught up in the legal system in some way, or you're caught up in
some
treadmill.
You're part of the matrix, and you're embedded into that, and you mm-hmm. couldn't even think about not being in that because you owe the credit cards, or you owe the mortgage, or your job is committed, blah, blah, blah.
Right.
And all the reasons are there to be responsible mm-hmm. and maintain that position. Mm-hmm. It took all of those years, almost 40 years or 35 years in my life, of lying dormant until I was ready to reactivate it. And I think a lot of people's energies, which were implanted, shall we say, or experiences that we came into this life awareness with and made sure that we had them anchored at an earlier age, usually before 7, 8, 9, 10, and then we put them in a safe place, and then lo and behold, something later in our life opens up that box.
Get them up. Yep.
And it's starting to connect us back to the place that we need to be for this new evolving sensibility, the new consciousness.
Mm-hmm. Well, just starting to realize, or me personally, and in the work that I've been doing, and Lynn's been seeing it happen in Europe as well, is that change in consciousness around the relationships with the angelic and celestial ones, and seeing also that when we get into the water, like with the cetaceans, is that we're learning from them. But I think they're learning from us as well.
Absolutely.
And it's not a situation that that we're being told, or I'm getting, that the archangelic realm is not sitting there kind of lording it over creation. Mm-hmm. They're saying, hey, we're here to help. Will you just tell us what you want?
I think it's more like, here, mm-hmm. grab this leaf.
Exactly.
Put your spin into it, and I'll take it back. Put mine into it, and I'll mm-hmm. give it back to you. And we'll know more just by that.
Yeah.
By that simple childlike exchange, around the maypole, so to speak, where you're weaving in and out at whatever level energetically with this other species, mm-hmm. and letting go of any expectations, the more that you can let go of, the more potential information comes in.
Well, the relationship's better when you don't project your identity onto them. And that works whether it's a...
Anthropomorphize, as somebody would say.
Yeah, so it's basically accepting them as they are.
Yeah, mm-hmm. there seems to be, out of the peripheral of our eyes, and that's where the dolphins love to hang as well, because just outside of where our eyes can actually see, there is a whole bunch of stuff dimensionally that's going on. There's like a little roughage, that little area where we can see but we can't see.
Yeah, the moment you see it straight on, it's any nature spirit. The moment you try and see it straight on, it's like your mind comes in, ego comes in.
Yes.
You don't see it anymore.
Yes.
You lose it.
Yes.
Yeah. Once you realize what you're seeing,
mm-hmm.
it's gone.
Right.
Yes. That's the Devic energy in Scotland is huge.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely amazing.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely amazing.
So you have a history of druids, mm-hmm. and I'm not an aficionado of the ancient druid customs or where they came from.
Is there
something that came over from the mainland? Did it originate in the British Isles? What's the history of the druids? Is it E.T.? I mean, there's been a lot of speculation.
I don't know. I've no idea. I know that it was very much a feminine-based...
matriarchal-based.
Yeah, mm-hmm. very much that. Very much land-worshipping. But I don't know much about it. I haven't read much about it, or even much about the history of Scotland.
Yeah.
I've always just gone on my feeling. The moment I start to get into the intellect of it, I lose it. So it's really what I pick up from the land.
Well, you—that's such a feminine aspect to you, and you embody, or she enables personify that. Mm. And you guys make a beautiful balancing of male and female energies, both within and without.
Mm.
You have a balanced male-female within each of yourselves, Mm-hmm. Seem, at least from my appearances anyway, comfortable with who you are.
Getting there.
And well, you know, and this is what I want to talk about, because you know, you're relatively a new relationship, and yet it's probably tying into ancient aspects of what you both recognize as yourselves. Mm-hmm. In other words, you're probably seeing a lot more things lining up, a lot more things clicking in this connection process. But also, there's the romance, and there's the so-called courtship, and things that go into a relationship that we want to preserve, I would hope, from the romantics of past, and yet still have a better handle on what relationships and how they're different now than they were.
Well, maybe that's a good place to begin, is maybe start just explaining or
how we... let's pick up on what you were just saying.
I was just saying that it seems like your statement there is perfectly in talking about the romance and courtship aspect. How we met last year and how the angels and dolphins were instrumental in bringing that together.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, you asked me to mention how I got here. Well, you know, basically dolphins got me here 2 years ago. So I started a pattern of doing some dolphin swims with Joan Ocean. And last year was the Harmonic Concordance. And Joan and I had another workshop scheduled with folks. And plus, you know, she'd asked that I lead the festivities up at Sky Ranch for the actual Concordance on November 8th.
Over 70 people, as I recall, in a giant outdoor circle. It was really quite wonderful. Did you attend that?
I did, yeah.
Oh, wow.
That was the first time I saw Isaac.
What do you know? What a place to be introduced to the guy in the mountain.
Yeah.
So, you know, really, she likes...
was it love at first sight?
No.
Okay. It took two or three times, you're saying.
All right. Go ahead. Tell them what it was.
What did you feel when you saw Isaac the first time? You're married to him now, so all is fair in love and war.
That's true. No more war.
I think, what happened was I was just amazed at the energy that was there. And I'd been working with the angels for about a year, and it was through Diana Cooper, who's the sort of UK version of Doreen Virtue, that I did, first of all, decided to come to Hawaii, because she had done a dolphin swim with Christine Edney.
Right. And I think I've seen the website of Diana Cooper.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And so, yes, you're right. There's a good analogy there.
So I'd done a course with her on how to present angel workshops and things like that. So that had alerted me, being on her website, to Christine. So anyway, Christine had set it up for us to go to the Harmonic Concordance that Isaac and Joan were co-presenting, and I was just amazed at the energies that came in, the angelic energies, and by that time I was fairly comfortable with channeling, and I could tell that the channeling was very, very clear, and it was my perception that there aren't a lot of people around who channel very clearly, and I was pleased about that. You know? And afterwards, I was looking at Isaac and I was having a look at him, and I thought, okay, well, there's something here that I was uncomfortable about watching him.
Mm-hmm.
And how could I put it? It was kind of playboy energy, I think.
Uh-huh.
That would be a nice way of putting it.
Uh-huh. Okay.
That was going on. And that was
for the radio audience, he's blushing at this stage.
Yeah. Playfully embarrassed.
Okay. It kind of pressed my buttons a bit. I found out later why.
Would you say cocky would be a way of describing
it? No, he wasn't, because he was just all over the women.
Oh, gotcha.
That would probably be a way of describing
it. I think I get the picture very clearly.
Somewhat mutual.
Yeah. Uh-huh. No, you're jumping ahead and you're not allowed. This is her form. Yeah.
Go ahead.
So, yeah.
Anyway, that pressed my buttons. It set off some sort of past life thing that I managed to heal a couple of months later on.
Oh, interesting.
To do with, what was so-called spiritual leaders and the abuse of sexual power and all that kind of thing. So that was my projection, and
So you're put off.
Yeah, I was put
just
off
a bit.
But
then came the more contained channeling later on,
on
and you came to that as well.
Yeah, on the 11-11, and again, Christian had set it up, and several of us were going to go along, and then they all pulled out, and it was just me, Christine, her friend Peter, and we were going to pick up another friend on the way, Tiger, Paul.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, oh, I don't really want to go. I'm tired. I've been swimming and, you know, it was dark. And it was a fair distance. It was an hour's journey because we were at Ho'okena. So I don't think I'll go. And then a little voice in the side of my head said, wait, it's the 11:11. And the previous year, I had been up at friends in Glen Lyon in Perthshire in Scotland. And I was making myself a cup of tea in their house in the morning. And I looked down at the kitchen clock and it said 11:11. And I've been seeing synchronized double numbers for some time. And I looked at my watch, which is the one I'm wearing, and it said 11:11, 11 seconds. And I looked, and it was on the 11th of the 11th. And I thought,
yeah, there's an echo there.
Yeah, exactly. And then exactly the same thing happened in the evening. I was back in the kitchen again, and exactly the same thing. So, back to Hawaii, it made me realize, well, there's something important about the 11:11. I knew it was connected with angels. This is the first public 11:11 event, thought I'd better go along to it. So I did, I dragged myself along to it. And where it, when everybody else was outside chatting away and whatever, Isaac was in setting up, and I just felt this really strong energy going on, and it was very peaceful and whatever, and I was aware of him, I was aware of the contact between us, but I still had no idea where it was going.
And, well, the contact you mentioned, sometimes when...
Yeah, energetic contact.
Okay, that,
we hadn't
so
even
psychosexual...
there was nothing sexual about it
okay.
at all. No, I was just aware of the heart energy.
Okay, okay.
I wasn't... I had put out a manifestation for my, you know, divine partner.
Ah.
But I hadn't put any face, name, place, or any expectation on it at all.
Okay.
And I certainly didn't have any... I wasn't looking.
Right.
I was open, but I wasn't looking.
Yeah.
And I had never imagined it would be, you know, halfway around the world.
Well, the paradigm often is that you are sexually attracted or physically attracted to somebody in a room full of people and you're, oh, there's
no,
something about that person
I
want to get close to.
That didn't happen at all for me, not at all.
Happened quite the opposite because you were a bit put off at first.
Well, when we did talk, chat for a few minutes before the presentation started, I felt a strong connection. But then I'd felt strong connections because I was open-hearted. I felt strong connections with other people at the time as well. So there was... And I had been wondering, well, you know, this new partner that I'm going to bring into my life, how will I know who it is? Because, you know, the old way of doing it is you feel like a sexual attraction and whatever. And I just felt open-hearted and heart-loving energy towards so many people that it was, well, do we take this further? Do we not take this further? So there was just that connection with Isaac and I.
Yeah, and the energy was such that I recognized something. I was busy wiring up the recording equipment and kind of getting in the space of, I'm going to get ready to do this thing. There was going to be 65, 70 people there, which is what it turned out to be. And so I just happened to look up, and she was standing in the row of chairs just behind where our group, Jones and my group, was sitting. And just she just stood there, and I just went... I just dropped everything and walked over and introduced myself. And it was just nothing self-conscious about it at all, except I have to do this. And then after the presentation was over, I was talked with Tiger Paw, who was there, the drummer, and she said, oh, I want you to meet my new friend, Lynn. And she dragged me over to meet the person I had already talked to at the beginning of the night. So she then... we talked for a few minutes, exchanged business cards, and said, you know, I've been thinking, I've had Scotland on the brain for 5 years. I've been thinking about coming to Scotland, wanting to come to Scotland. And she said, well, if you want to come over, you know, maybe see about bringing groups over and stuff. I said, sure, well, we'll email each other later. Fine, great. That was it. Hugged, and that was the last.
But that was the seed. That was the seminal event. And then it sort of gestated for a period. And then bring us up to what when you met again face to face.
Okay.
Well, I emailed him about 4 weeks later.
Yeah, end of December, toward the end of December. Yeah,
yeah, and very. I think by the time I got his second email, it was starting to become very obvious to me that there was something different going on here. The telepathy was very, very strong. For instance, an example of that was I was in my office one day and I was looking for my photo disc. CD thing for of Hawaii to see if I could send Isaac a picture so he could remember who I was. And just as I found it, I was putting it into the computer, I got an email from him saying, do you have a photograph?
Yeah.
So lots of kind of stuff like that happened. And by about the third or fourth email to each other, we set up a telephone call.
Mm-hmm.
And very quickly after that, we were talking fairly frequently.
Mm-hmm.
And
every other day, at least.
Every other day, yeah. Mm-hmm. And then within about a week and a half of that,
mm-hmm.
I think Isaac said, well, should we talk plane tickets?
And she ended up coming over to visit me in Oregon first.
Uh-huh. Interesting.
Early February.
So it had already got into, so shall we say, the romantic phase of your relationship on the telephone to the extent that you wanted to share a piece of your world with her.
Mm-hmm. The romance was there, but it was completely colored around all of these spiritual and telepathic and energy things going on,
yeah.
Feeling each other 6,000 miles apart,
yeah.
You know, just
yeah.
feeling each other's presence.
Right.
And
if it was that strong 6,000, what would
yeah.
happen if we brought it together?
Exactly.
And for you, being in an area that you're familiar with and knowing the energies there, you would be able to get a really good read
yeah.
as
and
to what was going on.
And I've been having a lot of experiences like that over that 10-year period. It started,
uh-huh.
you know, it's been going on all my life, but the profoundness of that 10 years ago was
mm-hmm.
sort of clued me into what to pay attention to.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So when I felt this connection with her, I thought, there's something here that we need to look at and experience.
So we're 3-6 months afterwards, or what time frame are we talking about after the initial meeting? Did you come back to Oregon?
I went to Oregon on February the
10th.
Oh, so 3 months.
Yeah.
Yep,
3-4 months.
Mm-hmm. She was there for 2 weeks,
mm-hmm.
and it was an incredibly high time. Incredibly high.
Uh-huh.
Most of us, I was a bit more grounded. I'll let her say it in her own words.
Yeah, that's right.
I felt
yeah.
during the two, it was fantastic. It was
yeah.
incredible. And I felt
a profound
such
connection,
comfort.
More profound connection.
Incredible comfort and incredible intensity at the
uh-huh.
same time.
I think since very close to the beginning of the emailing,
mm-hmm.
I was surrounded by just incredibly high energies.
Mm-hmm.
So I knew something was going on.
Right.
And I was basically just swept away with the energies and the support and
mm-hmm.
whatever. By the time I got to Oregon and actually met with Isaac physically, I mean, when we came together and we hugged, it was my legs almost gave way underneath me.
Mm-hmm.
It was kind of like that the whole 2 weeks I was there. My head was just totally
mm-hmm.
up in the clouds. It wasn't like I was swept away with romance
mm-hmm.
or anything like
mm-hmm.
that. It's just the energies were so high.
Mm-hmm.
I just wasn't physically able to ground them all. So he was my grounding rod, as it were. Then. And looking back on it, I realized that it was really important for me to be in those very high energies, and that was the way it had to be at that time, because
mm-hmm,
I was
mm-hmm.
really being downloaded with all sorts of information
mm-hmm.
and messages and whatever.
Mm-hmm. But the relationship moved to a partnership relationship,
very
where cool. the two of you are working in tandem. As opposed to just knowing each other?
Not immediately, but sort of. I mean, there was just this ease of being able to coordinate
integrate.
Together.
Because mm-hmm.
We talked about, okay, what I'm going to come over to Scotland next,
sure.
but I want to set up some workshops
yeah,
and presentations.
Yeah.
And in the space of like 2-3 weeks, we set up 2 months' worth
mm-hmm.
of things. It was just,
yeah.
boom, it just slotted
so
in.
So purposes, cross-purposes,
mm-hmm.
just fell together like a zipper.
Yep.
It was easy and it was effortless to see how your space and time intervals would just match up.
Mm.
And energetically, that's got to tell you some good stuff.
Well, the energy is like she's saying, was phenomenal in terms of the nature of external, internal, however you want to look at it. The force of the angelic energies or the power of the angelic energy and devic and cetacean was just there from the get-go.
Mm-hmm.
And it just
mm-hmm.
felt as if, well, we've said it more than once during February and March. It just feels like this is bigger than either of us together. It feels bigger than us. Whatever that is, we don't know. And we just kept asking, show us what in the world this connection, this union is
mm-hmm.
about. Because
mm-hmm.
it's not about our personalities.
Mm-hmm.
Otherwise, we would have been romance la-la land.
Sure,
and
sure.
we weren't.
What were you showing?
Well, that's been evolving.
Well, initially.
During the Scottish time, we went through a quite a deepening of our connection.
with each other,
yes,
and the spirituality of the relationship.
Spirituality of it, because of the nature of the workshops, mm-hmm. were very energetic. Mm-hmm. One of them was Adelphi Mystery School.
Mm-hmm.
One of
very briefly, what for the listeners who don't know what Adelphi,
yeah.
on your site, and that's isaacariel.com, we'll give you a little bit of insights as to what Isaac is doing with his life for mm-hmm. a number of years now. But just very briefly, the Delphic Mystery School, mm-hmm. Use the dolphins and whales in what way?
You bring the energy of the dolphins and whales in to help basically unhinge people from their patterns.
Okay.
To gracefully and gently allow them, give them a space of such unconditional love
mm-hmm.
and support to be able to go through what I call shake and bake,
okay.
which is facing karmic patterns, personal patterns,
mm-hmm.
egoic blocks, things mm-hmm. of that nature, within the context of the group, context of the energies that we call in, because basically, I don't care whether you're on dry land at the top of Mount Everest, you can call in dolphins.
That's true.
And so what we, what I've been guided to do is basically to realize that what I had deemed to be an entirely angelic, overlighted process
uh-huh.
in the form of the Shambhala Mystery School that I've been doing 6 years earlier,
mm-hmm.
that bringing in the cetacean energies now softened the whole process
mm-hmm.
and at the same time deepened it.
Mm-hmm.
So the Delphi Mystery School was a two-day affair that basically goes through the primary clearings at the physical, mm-hmm. etheric, mental, and emotional levels and reorients people to more of their original divine blueprint.
And Lynn, you
whatever
were facilitating this particular workshop with Isaac?
No, not really. I was experiencing
uh-huh.
them.
And supportive as well.
Mm-hmm.
Very
yeah.
supportive.
Energetically holding the space.
Mm-hmm.
But I didn't know whether you had were contributing to
I hadn't participated in his workshops at all.
Uh-huh.
I didn't know what made them up. I've been doing my own angel workshops,
mm-hmm.
which were just one-day affairs,
uh-huh.
Helping people connect with the angels and that kind of thing. But no, really, I was more interested in
mm-hmm.
experiencing them as well.
Uh-huh.
If we had carried on doing that type of workshop,
mm-hmm.
then probably
we'd start doing them together.
We'd start doing them together, but
uh-huh.
that became apparent that that's not where our work was going.
Yeah.
Where is your work going?
Mm-hmm.
It came out of the. It was born out of what happened,
mm-hmm.
and so we're in Scotland. Mm-hmm. The two of you start to get a mm-hmm. purpose. A notion of a purpose
a sense
of your coming
yeah.
together and what might come out of it, kind of a creative child, if you will, of both of your energy.
I'd say it's, mm-hmm. yeah, it's a service.
Okay.
Would you want to start with that or you want me to?
Carry on.
Well, our sense of really what our relationship was becoming started coming forth really strongly in June after I had returned from Scotland. And the first thing that became started becoming more and more apparent is that there was something about our chemistry together, the alchemy of the relationship, that had profound effects on people's hearts and profound effects on people's ideas about what they've been looking for in relationship.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Not saying we're like the ultimate model on the planet or anything, but it seemed like more and more to us, just us being at peace with each other and being in a complete state of transparency with each other
mm-hmm.
had a profound effect on people. So I'd say that became more apparent in July when she came over to the United States again, and we experienced other people experiencing us and going through huge transformations, and without us really even working at it.
Mm.
But when we sit down and work with somebody who's going through something,
mm-hmm.
the interaction between us with that person
mm-hmm.
or with a couple was quite amazing.
Mm.
And it happened a little bit in February when she first came over, but it really started becoming dynamically apparent that the thing was really bigger than both of us in ways that we have yet to find out.
Yeah.
So what has moved into that is that we both, there was some occurrences at the end of June. We had talked about marriage in April and May when I was over there. It never really gelled. We talked about some of our issues about
mm-hmm.
the whole old paradigm marriage
mm-hmm.
and some of the things about old paradigm relationships.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the
mm-hmm.
things that was apparent from the very beginning in our conversations was our desire to create and model
uh-huh.
a fourth or fifth dimensional relationship,
uh-huh.
something based on the fact that there are no limits. And so that if we're really grounding itself in love without conditions,
mm-hmm.
then anything that is less than that is a mechanism that has nothing to do with acceptance, nothing
mm-hmm.
to do with true love. So we really grounded our relationship based on those particular principles and archetypes.
Mm-hmm.
And so in doing that, we feel our work is going to really go in the direction of dynamically, energetically, and actively creating our union as a model, not for other people to live like us, but for other people to find exactly who they are when you strip all the layers of the onion away and stop pretending, in other words, kind of like cultural deprogramming, and start creating relationships that function not just dynamically, but just at a level of peace. I mean, just the sense of peace that we have being with each other. And also being able to realize that I don't have to process her stuff, and she doesn't have to process mine, but I can sit here and hold the space for her to do whatever she's got to do. So it's not a situation of sacrifice, or what I call spiritual codependence, where you feel like you have to do it all for the other partner. So we're getting a lot of downloads, a lot of information over the summer and through into the fall, but in the end of June it became very, very abundantly apparent in a flash that I wanted to propose marriage to this being. And I just caught myself in the middle of this ecstatic space that was completely and totally coming in around me that said, this is right. And I never imagined myself ever being married again. But I knew that if this commitment was accepted, that it was going to be very unconventional, out of the box. In other words, don't try to define it, because we're not going to. And I don't know where it's all going to lead anyway, because basically part of our marriage vows that occurred in September and also again in October, but predominantly in September, is that we have chosen that the energies of all that is lead the relationship, and that the relationship lead us, not the other way around. So this is a real dynamic change, and how our work's going to flow from this, I think we have yet to find out.
Well, let's take a little break from our conversation and allow the audience to take a little breather. We'll listen to a little musical interlude for a couple of minutes, and when we come back, I want to delve into the idea of relationship, but focused on the divine archetypes and how it's affecting us in this new millennium. And your work certainly has to deal with that, and establishing a new way of discussing that will be part of what we'll get into when we get back. So we'll be back in just a little bit. Hang in there. Listening to Dolphinville Radio, www.dolphinville.com. Thanks for listening. Okay, we're coming back now with Isaac George and Lynn Patterson, a newly married couple, and we're modeling the new millennium after what it means to be married in the 21st century. We're old and smarter in some respects, or maybe more innocent and open in other respects, in the way that we're viewing the world through the circumstances that we've been given. We've all had the opportunities to explore things that didn't work in our relationships, and have gone through one or more relationships that by some measure would be deemed failures, or can no longer go on in any respect. Things that started out in one way often come to a halt or a change, or they evolve out into something else. But bringing our audience up into where we are in the present after being married with Lynn these last couple of months, you begin to bring your own total sensibilities of your connection to the divine. And the archetypal idea of what that means, you've been dealing with it by channeling from the archangels. You've been introducing people the idea of higher realms of information. You mentioned before the break that there was a fourth and fifth dimensional element has been described, has been brought into a lot of literature, that we're moving into now sixth, seventh, eighth, ninth dimensional sensibilities, or skipping Fibonacci, who knows. But we are moving very rapidly, and I think we all can discern that this new millennium is bringing new ways of communicating. And we have to start to strip away and let go of some of the limiting concepts that were preventing us from really expanding to our full potential selves. So as we look at our full potential selves individually, we're now beginning to share those full potential selves with each other, and suddenly the divine intervention of our own potential selves as divine start to materialize as a new form of relationship. So that's what it looks like to me. How does it look like to you?
It looks to me like relationships are not exclusive like they used to be. I think that would be the first thing I would say, is that they all now need to be inclusive. Well, at least that's what Isaac and I felt right from the start, was that we didn't want to shut anybody out of our relationship at all. And Isaac and I love each other dearly, and I would never say, though, that I love Isaac more than I love some of my other friends or my pets or my family. And that's first and foremost what I mean by being inclusive, is that we don't limit our love just for each other. We just are open-hearted, and we just share with absolutely everybody. And where that takes us, we're not entirely sure yet, but it was a determination we made right from the start, wasn't it? Because when I first of all met Isaac, he was actually seeing or had sexual relationships with four women. You can imagine how much I shifted my position from seeing him in Hawaii then in February, realizing that he was and he made a little confession on the phone one day. He said, by the way, I am seeing other women. I said, so? That's your choice, you know.
You had no attachments or any sense of ownership per se that often is associated with
that's first and foremost. There's no ownership, there's no exclusivity going on. And this is what the spiritual energies around me were showing me very, very strongly at that time. And putting me into a place of unconditional love. And when you're in that place of unconditional love, and you have such peace and trust that you know that there is nothing in the world or out of this world that anybody else could ever hurt or harm you. And so that's the position I was coming from, that if I was going to be hurt or harmed, that would be my choice. It wouldn't be the other person that was doing that. So holding that space in the relationship is my first and foremost goal for it, really.
Yeah. The interesting thing is the foundation of what we have felt from the very beginning, where we felt guided from, was that it was necessary to create a primacy within this relationship, but not an exclusivity. So the primacy is, we have been brought together, obviously, by the angels and the dolphins, in such a manner as to create some type of, as you would say, some type of frequency, some type of wavelength. This goes beyond the personal, okay? So for us,
or divine purpose, shall we say?
Yeah, exactly. Why should we hide behind any other thing and say, oh no, that can't be? Let's just be out front and say that there is a divine purpose to anyone who is willing to dedicate themselves or a relationship or an enterprise to allow those energies to co-create with you. So non-exclusivity.
Now, what happens now that you're married? If he meets somebody and has a sexual relationship, how does that affect the marital situation?
No, not at all.
It doesn't affect it at all?
It wouldn't affect the marital situation at all. Otherwise, we wouldn't have got married.
So that was kind of an agreement and understanding.
Absolutely.
If we're going to transform or say, have the opportunity for the divine to create a new definition of marriage, how can we even go back to that old thing of, if I meet someone and we have an exchange of energy, if we have a relationship, we create some kind of bonding, then in some ways the love that is shared there can actually enrich our relationship. Mm-hmm. It can actually bring something new into the relationship. And the only way that can happen is if there's complete and total transparent honesty.
Right.
And there can be a complete and total understanding that there is some value, there is some kind of growth potential,
sure.
or some kind of love that is genuine.
Mm-hmm.
No agendas, no strategies,
right.
no subterfuge. Cannot, you know, nothing of love can exist under the circumstances.
Mm-hmm.
It gets distorted, gets messed up. And does it serve the purpose of the relationship? So
mm-hmm.
the first question is, does it serve either individual's personal growth, their spiritual unfoldment, and will the other person support that? And does it serve the relationship?
Mm-hmm.
In other words, make sure, doggone up sure up front, that you don't go around unconsciously intending to hurt anybody
mm-hmm.
or consciously intending to hurt
mm-hmm.
anybody.
Mm-hmm.
So do no harm is basically a very good rule, and
mm-hmm.
golden rule mm-hmm. definitely comes in there as well.
Well, there are some schools of thought that have used the polyamorous model, shall
mm-hmm.
we say, over the last 20 or 30 years. One comes to mind called Moore University out of the West Coast,
mm-hmm.
where people have been living together sort of communally, or at least under the idea of the auspices of a commune when it came to their sexual mores. I listened, and there was something inside of me that didn't feel as if I would be comfortable personally in that kind of a situation. I felt more comfortable in my old tried and true monogamous, and you know, the old definition of many of the male testosterone-based
mm-hmm.
Syndromes is
right.
that given the opportunity, the male always has a mistress, or always has, you know, a history of mistresses.
Or the fantasy of a harem or whatever.
Yeah, yeah. So
mm-hmm.
how does that apply, let's say, to your thinking in this 21st century way?
I wouldn't differentiate between what men have been thinking or desiring and what women have been mm-hmm. wanting. I think women have just been a lot more honest in sharing their love. I think men have been a little bit more exclusive that way. And I think what I feel about it is that men have got just as much, if not more, fear on the idea of polyamory than women have.
Why is that?
Well, I think that women are already sharing their love. They're
uh-huh.
sharing their love a lot more. They're a lot, generally speaking, they're a lot more open-hearted. They have closer relationships with their children, with their friends,
mm-hmm.
and whatever. Whereas men, maybe it's the testosterone, I don't know what it is. It's wounded male energy for certain that hold the guys apart from each other, and you don't see as close relationships with that. So
mm-hmm.
just because we haven't seen the possibility of women having more than one partner because it's been a taboo subject, I think there's going to be a lot of frightened guys out there when
mm-hmm.
they start to realize that their partners may want to do what is or we've been seeing as a male prerogative,
uh-huh, uh-huh.
As it were. So how I'm going to be about it, I don't know yet.
Mm-hmm.
I really
and
don't
I don't know.
Know
how I'm going to be about
right,
it. It's
right.
going to be a growth thing for
mm-hmm.
for myself, even though I've had this experience of this foundation, which was, you know, I was led into as part of my growth. It was very clear to me at the time that I was being led into it by the energies or the under the guidance of the Magdalene archetypes long before the Da Vinci Code even got published.
Yeah, yeah. Uh-huh.
But basically, there are two things operative here for me to mention. And number one, most of the books and material on alternative love styles
mm-hmm.
are written by women who are professionals in the field of psychology and family counseling
mm-hmm.
and child counseling. I mean, they are basically the pioneers. It is not men who are stepping forward into this arena.
Mm-hmm.
And if it were, then I would say there is some truth to this old idea about, you know, the men at the first drop of a hat would have multiple mistresses
mm-hmm.
and
mm-hmm.
a primary wife. And maybe that's what it was like back in the old harem days.
Mm-hmm.
But where women are going, it's not just about the sex. It's about love. It's about community. It's about nurturing relationships. It's about creating an atmosphere in which the old warfare between the sexes is brought to a complete and successful conclusion.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And that means including the men.
Yeah.
So you cannot any longer have this tribal separation.
Yes.
The second thing that's operative in this is that the old archetypes of the divine feminine, if you will, were operative through the wisdom and the perception of the communities of ancient times that the women didn't need to be enlightened. They already had it. And so that's why they were the ones who were the in the temples doing the sexual alchemy with men and healing the war out of men. If you will, because that's basically what they were designed to do, to bring an enlightened experience of enlightenment or experience of illumination to the male psyche at that time. And so the women who worked in the temples of Isis or Diana or the Delphi, any of these sisterhoods.
We think of the Minoan temple,
yeah,
or goddess with the two snakes, one in each hand,
yeah,
and as a metaphor for controlling the two male elements. So
right.
We talked about this earlier.
In balance, yeah. It's all about balance. And so when you talk about the balance, the women in ancient times were entrusted with the secrets of the sexual alchemy as a way to transform. And so they didn't need to go to other temples to get their enlightenment.
Mm.
The men had to come to their temples.
Yes.
So the women have been in the forefront in both ways.
Yeah.
So it's very interesting that the fascination now with the divine archetypes such as Magdalene.
Uh-huh.
And it's basically being, you know, revealed whether by, you know, reinventing the myth or whatever you want to call it, or no look at the historical Magdalene, the historical Yeshua, is that what if they had married? Oh my goodness. What if they had sexual relations? Oh my goodness. What if there was a child? What is the meaning of the descendants of that bloodline? What is the meaning of the fact that perhaps Yeshua couldn't have accomplished his desire to blaze a trail through the veil of death, through the resurrection, if he hadn't had a spiritual partner, a consort, a companion of the feminine to be there and help him.
Mm-hmm.
So this is the basically the information in the Magdalene manuscript, the Da Vinci
mm-hmm.
Code,
mm-hmm.
Margaret Starbird's works,
mm-hmm.
but more than that, they're in the Nag Hammadi Gnostic Gospels that
mm-hmm.
Range from 70 to 200 AD, which basically indicates that Magdalene was not someone to be trifled with, and she was
mm-hmm.
absolutely and completely and self-possessed, knew exactly what she was doing, and probably she was a priestess of Isis.
Well, I like to dial it back a little bit farther.
Yeah.
When we start the archetype with Lilith as the female who has her own presence of mind,
mm-hmm.
and according to some of the mythology, or at least some of the ancient Torah that's been recovered, Lilith and Adam were created at the same time.
As equals
to begin this consciousness and this conscious world of creation, co-creation, and the children. Now, not much has been said about the children of Adam and Lilith.
Nope.
There seems to be a non-history, and the fact that she just got ticked off with the relationship, went over to Babylon, had a bunch of kids over there, and we don't know much from beyond that. But what has been put in place is a way of looking at the relationship model between man and woman.
Yeah.
But, the Adam and Eve mythology, which we all embrace in the Western world, Lilith is not even on the picture. In fact, she was transformed, according to some, to the snake on the tree,
yeah,
tempting Eve to wake up to her own femininity.
Indeed.
So we're looking now, as we are moving into this new millennium,
mm-hmm.
and we have an opportunity to look at a pluralistic society.
On a collective level.
Yes.
And the only way the collective can actually get this is if there are people that are going to listen to their hearts rather than their programming,
yeah,
and step into the place of where they can become a vehicle to actually embody and model the energy.
Mm-hmm.
So we're not talking about an out there in, like an outside in game.
Right.
We're talking inside out. And so it's going to have to be people who are willing to say, I don't know, show me. Surrender to the spirit of the moment and allow the relationship to be guided forward by these new principles. And the new principles are is everything's possible. And it's everything's possible when we come together and work together.
Mm-hmm. Well, let me ask Lynn, how have you experienced this divine feminine essence? And it seems to be coming to the forefront in a variety of ways. The media certainly has brought it back to us, and there's very other ways. How has it come to you, and how has it been made obvious to you?
Well, back in February when I first made physical contact with Isaac again, that was my first real strong impressions of the feminine energies coming in, the divine feminine energies coming in. I got messages from Magdalene at that point, and I got messages from Mary. I also got messages from Yeshua as well. Also other divine feminine archetypes, aspects of the goddess, if you will, came into me during lovemaking with Isaac. I would find myself embodying different aspects of the goddess.
Mm.
And I think there's one occasion when I had, it felt like every aspect of the goddess came through me at one point. There was the sacred prostitute, there was Kuan Yin with all of her beautiful compassion, there was Pele with her fire and go-get-em energy, and there was the Mother Mary energy that came through, that was, you know, so there was all of these energies that were coming through over that two-week period that that I was with Isaac, and not only were they showing me forgiveness for my own hurt female side, but also they were showing me forgiveness for my own hurt inner male, which was very, very profound. And they were showing the same thing to Isaac.
Right. Mm-hmm.
They were forgiving the male energy, and I think that's what we all have to do first and foremost, is start to forgive the male side of ourselves, because we all feel that we've done the female harm with that, and the feminine energies were coming forward for me then to say, you haven't done us harm. This is just your belief. This is what you're programmed to do. This is the way that things are supposed to be. But now please just forget all of that and just be in the moment and love yourself.
Sure.
And just forgive that male aspect of yourself. Because until you can forgive that male aspect of yourself, you're not going to be an equal partner. You are not going to be a balance within yourself. Your male and female will not be balanced. You will not be able to start to heal any sexual issues that you have, which is probably comes back to most of humanity's problems, is sexual issues.
I'd say it's been used as a tool in our society and culture as a manipulation device. There's certainly a history of that. The church is probably the first one that you can point to and say, look how they've used this. Something in our nature of our being, which we were made to feel ashamed about. And even in the sense of the Catholics using the original sin, saying, you know, you didn't have a choice. You were born already, and you're already in the thick of things. You can't get out of it.
Yeah,
so this guilt, shame, blame.
Let's not forget that each and every one of us have both been male and female over many, many lifetimes.
Yes.
So there's no one here to blame.
So
this is not a time for women to turn around and say,
you owe me.
Exactly.
Right.
Or it's all your fault or anything like
that. Or I'm taking over now. Either.
That's reactive karma.
Or I'm taking over.
Yes.
Totally,
exactly.
Totally reactive.
Not
form.
A feminist thing coming through here.
Well, that's what I get to. I think one of the things that occurs to me is that this is, and what I think it was Renee Eisler in the
Chalice
and the Blade in the 80s again, brought to the whole idea of the male taking over at a certain point in our ancient history, and a society shifted from a matriarchal to a patriarchal society. And I think rather than now we're ready to go and succeed in going beyond leadership and say we have to follow the dictates of either male or female, but step into a true partnership so that both of us together are creating, and that there isn't the need to tug of war or, you know, jerk and follow as has been the case. So again, this piston activity, this need to progress, this need to command, and even in the word commitment, command seems to be embedded.
Yeah.
So when we think of the old paradigm of marriage, commitment, we're already tying and saying we are going to be conditional in our arrangement,
in our
partnership. Yeah. And we'll only parson our emotional body, our heart, ourselves to this one committed box, which was the marital institution.
That was a useful growth tool. Monogamy will not disappear in the new milieu. It will be a choice. It will be a preference, just like anything else will be. But the whole point of it is, it's going to be coming from a place from the inside that that person needs that for their growth, or they need to create that stability to grow through. Wonderful. There's nothing in the new energies that says that any form is invalid, except not recognizing the feminine and the masculine as inherently equal and inherently capable of co-creating an incredibly new world and healing anything, tackling anything. But you have to remember is that the feminine energy, the archetypal feminine automatically comes from a place of being, automatically comes from a place of allowingness. There is no ambition in the feminine psyche whatsoever. And whereas the male psyche has been progress oriented. So now with this rebirth of the masculine through the feminine energies, you know, example, women healing their masculine side, and I've always been more comfortable in my feminine side, my goddess side. That's always been the energy that's been more prevalent in my fields. But now coming into my healed masculine side, I'm seeing that this is the purpose of the Divine Feminist, to reach out to the masculine and say, hey, you know, we got to do it together. Mm-hmm. There is nothing here that says, you know, it's this way or no way. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. It's got to be both and, not either or.
And that to me is one way of looking at what is possible in the new millennium. Mm-hmm. What is the 21st century partnership, relationship? How are we modeling it? And I think we have to start inventing new ways of even describing it. Such words as commitment need to be replaced. It was suggested by one of my interviews last week with Jim Channon that devotion should replace commitment mm-hmm. as the word describing why we're in relationship. That way, there's not this give and take setup where the rope is in place and you gave me this much and I have to take back this much.
That's a business deal. Yeah, that's not I love you, it's I take you.
Right.
You know,
I take you, exactly
yeah, I take
right.
you, or you know, it's a buy and sell agreement. It's not
right.
that.
You take this woman to be your lawfully wedded wife. That's like a contractual agreement, and the gavel comes down, and by God, you know, you're part of the goats and sheep, you know, you've just been taken. And you, I think, as a woman, taking on the other way a hand, the old paradigm anyway, those models are dissolving as we begin to feel more confident within ourselves as to how we feel
exactly.
and how we are letting go and starting to step into what I call the multidimensional awarenesses. Certainly, if we can look at 3D reality and the whole idea of 3D reality from a quantum level, which is becoming very popular with movies like What the Bleep, we're learning that it's one option in many as to how to look at the reality. Now, how would you deem fifth-dimensional relationship reality?
I think first and foremost, you know, sovereignty is the key word there. And sovereignty just means self-integrous
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
and following one's own spirit without hesitation. Trusting
yes.
inherently that following that spirit will always lead you to the most peaceful result. And if everyone else is following their spirit, then that's going to lead to the most peaceful result. So essentially, you have a situation in which everything is basically spirit or high consciousness guided at all times. But within that, all these individual and unique expressions are occurring. To realize that kind of world, maybe even the next 100 years or 500 years, is going to be a stretch. But it's got to start somewhere, and it starts with individuals, and it starts with people coming together in mm-hmm. partnership to play with that energy, to embody it, mm-hmm. to send it back and forth, to experiment mm-hmm. with it. And one of the arenas that I think that the healing and the experimentation have to occur in is in the sexual arena. Like Lynn said, that a great many of the areas of wounding and mistrust are not only from organized religions, but also have occurred in indigenous cultures.
Mm-hmm.
And these things, these woundings, these behaviors, these old things of the past that need and ask for healing,
mm-hmm.
Have to do with agendas that occurred in the dim history of time.
Absolutely.
That, you know, maybe there's not enough space and time in this program to discuss, but it certainly needs to be addressed
mm-hmm.
in that, you know, genetic manipulation, mm-hmm. you know, I think the story of Adam and Eve, in a sense, is sort of like a mirror or an encoded diagram
Slowly.
Of where we were genetically manipulated
yes.
or disconnected.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And when fear entered the scene, man looked to get the upper hand.
Mm-hmm,
and
mm-hmm.
because in his anger and his rage of being not only separated from source,
yes.
but also separated from the feminine, he became a rage machine.
Mm-hmm,
and
mm-hmm.
His divine purpose had been lost and forgotten.
Well, that brings me to what the nature of the source is.
Mm-hmm.
You can't get to the source without going through the divine feminine,
yeah.
in my opinion.
Mm-hmm.
And we were separated very distinguishedly from the source element of who our consciousness was. A part of us are plugging back in to what it feels like to be in that space of total acceptance
yeah.
With a divine source. Our connection to the source through the divine feminine, and again, that balance point, perhaps.
And energetically speaking, when you're talking quantum and multidimensional realities, that's something that is not addressed even as it could be in this linguistic time, in this language of this time,
mm-hmm.
this era. By methodologies that are attempting to bring men and women back into harmony with each other, such as Tantra and sacred sexuality. there is a very deep and powerful alchemy that actually affects the genetic coding in the human body when there is an element of complete unconditional love and trust available between a man and a woman. Mm-hmm. What happens in the ability for the ability of those, you know, people partnered can access, you know, multidimensional mm-hmm. states and spaces that actually allow then for that energy to transform the body, but also transform the space around them. Mm-hmm. And who knows where it can go from there.
Well, I think we have an option in the relationship that I feel anyway, that we have an option now to be able to be really deciding, and we're the ones who are deciding what happens in a relationship rather than being influenced by outside mm-hmm. factors of what relationships should have been or have to be, or what our family or what our friends say, or what our immediate society expects of us because we have agreed to be in a partnership. Mm-hmm. And so that's part of the other thing that we're up against, not only our own internal belief system from the inside out, but what we're being greeted with from the outside in.
Yes.
So let's talk about that when we come back after a couple of more minutes of break here.
Okay.
And we'll explore more about the Isaac Ariel connection and how the Ariel feminine divine angel has brought in some information that's helped us get to this new phase.
Thanks.
Hang in there. We'll be right back. You're listening to Dolphinville Radio, dolphinville.com. All right, well, we're back for the last section with Isaac George and Lynn Patterson. Thank you for sharing your time with us. We're still radiating from an amazing swim with the dolphins this morning. And we talked about the divine feminine, and I personally believe that there's an aspect to all that we've been describing as unconditional and totally enveloping. The divine feminine principles seem to be so clearly represented in the dolphins. Mm-hmm. And the dolphins particularly, maybe even more so than whales, I don't know. I'm not that familiar with the whales, but the dolphins seem to embrace the feeling of this total embracing and hoping to, you know, like nurturing that we felt today, so motherly in their care and sharing in today's experience. It's really the reason I came to Hawaii. I didn't even know to the profound degree that such an experience as we had today, swimming in the bay with hundreds of dolphins, mothers and babies and family units of 5 and 7 that were sharing with us and toying with the humans that were there as we exchanged the leaf game, as mm-hmm. it's talked. Many people have an opinion of what that represents, but it is like a simple child's game, a motion in the water, body language that, here I have this organic toy, I'm holding it close to me, I'm putting my energy into it, and now I leave it for you.
It's a sharing.
And you hold it, and you put your energy into it, and then you leave it back for them. And there seems to be this gentle, beautiful, energetic conversation with no words, but all the heart. So the heart energy that we share, and I think that to me is really the divine feminine coming into full bloom and how we're dealing with that. That brought me to Hawaii. I assume that part of that has brought brought you to Hawaii.
Brought me back and brought us back.
Yeah.
Yep, absolutely.
Well, how do you feel the divine feminine energy? Let's even go into some of the things that Ariel has had to say about this process. What has the angelic force, the divine feminine, archangelic force of Ariel's had to say about what the divine feminine is doing now?
Well, the Ariel's, you know, I think of Ariel as a persona, but I also think of Ariel as an archetype that exists in the spirit of nature itself. And, you know, for those not familiar with Ariel, you can look up all kinds of things in Apocrypha and kind of delve into the sort of storied history of that particular archangel. But Ariel is connected to nature, the spirit of nature, overseer of nature, and also very much so involved with that process. That Ariel's predominant fascination, or should we say her area of expertise, one of them, is how we humans are dealing physically with the process of ascension. Now, what comes into that mix is the feminine. So how did she present itself? How did she, he, it present itself to me the first time? Was as in the image and the vibration of a female, a huge, powerful female, like a Pele type energy, but a female nonetheless.
Yes. A divine female.
Divine female, feminine presence. Whereas in Sumerian times, Ariel was seen as a very powerful masculine presence.
Interesting.
The name means lion of God, not lioness of God. So, but Ariel's perception, or the Ariel's information right now is, you know, it is sort of in the nomenclature of our what they call archangelic science, which is they're looking at the whole model of ascension from a very bio-psychic biological, psychic, emotional, mental construct. And Ariel's information around the advent of the divine energies here is to say this is designed from source to help us change at a subatomic and molecular level so that we can embody these energies without blowing apart, so that we can essentially balance all of these divine masculine and feminine aspects within a male-female paradigm. So the information from her at this moment and what's been coming through and starting to come through is, you know, we like to talk about the multidimensional energy aspects, and we like to talk about the, you know, interspecies interactions, but we've never been human, so we don't know how to advise you how to deal with your male-female issues because we've never been split and separate. You know, there are other sources and voices for that kind of thing, but they are looking and providing an incredible, so far, appetizers, little tantalizing teasers about how the coming together of male-female, alchemically, chemically, biophysically, psychically, emotionally, mentally, and spiritually reunites us with that source of all that is and with them. And that's their fascination right now, is to say, you know, sex is not sex. It's a vehicle home. It's not about procreation. It's about co-creation now, guys. It's about healing all of the inner and outer walls that you have had, and breaking down your barriers between one another, and
sexuality
really creating the heart connection.
Sexuality without attachments and agendas.
Or expectations, saying, which is the same as a judgment.
Right, and commitments, expectations, they all seem to fit into the same kind of
category. So, you know, we come back to the island, we get into the water, the first day we're out with China and Milena, and what do we get a treat to? You know, huge bouts of lovemaking, you know, and that happened last year when when Joan dropped me in the water the day, a couple days before the concordance, and said, see what the dolphins want to talk about, you know, about the concordance. What did I see? Episode after episode of making love, without attachment, with complete joy, with complete heartfelt connection, with nurturing, with sweetness, with exuberance and joy, and it wasn't about anything except we're here, we're together, and we're having a great time. And I'm sitting there going, the more I've gotten into it and read about it, it's like, to them, it's like a handshake. But I think it's more than that, but it's ecstasy. One of the things that triggered me about the angelic information and the goddess information has been through the Magdalene books, specifically, I'm going to drop a name here, the Magdalene Manuscript by Tom Kenyon and Judy Sion, is that the frequency of ecstasy is food for the ka and etheric bodies. It builds a huge energy charge, a huge electromagnetic energy field, through which you can manifest anything. Anything. You can even raise the body from the dead. So, I'm going, there's an electromagnetic biophysical key here that is available to everybody. It doesn't mean You know, it's almost like using sex to get to a place where you don't need sex anymore.
Yes.
It's using sexual energy, but also it's recognizing sexual energy happens even at the ninth dimension. You know, when you talk about universal beings and how they can go into a complete merge with one another just to experience each other's identity and history, but with no agenda, no putting something in the middle and saying this is what this means, because the spirit of eternal oneness has brought them together in that moment, doesn't mean they move in together. You know, so it's a whole idea now of going, what is Ariel talking about? What are the angels talking about? It's like, start peeling away even more layers of who you think you are and what you have been culturally inculcated with so that you can really shine, so you can really stretch. Don't put any limits on anything. And if you're going to make a choice about how you're going to relate with each other, have it come from a true place and that it works for you. If you don't feel comfortable with multi-partner relationships, don't try to fit there. If you don't feel comfortable with monogamy, don't try to fit there. If you are going to ask the goddess to lead you into healing and wholeness, that's a good place to start. And we're there to support that, not to tell you how to do it. So Ariel's been very blatantly clear about that they don't have a clue about how this is going to go. We're the ones creating it. That's the main thing. The angelics are not here to interfere. The dolphins are not here to interfere. They're just going to model what works for them, and then we take what works for us until we're ready for the next bit. And we have to realize what we're doing is not just happening human level, but multidimensionally it's happening, and in that the human is brought into the play ground of the multidimensional. The human body, the human psyche, the ego, and everything all goes through a huge transformation as a result. Anything you want to add to that?
Well, for me it's very simple. If we look at in the beginning, if there was just one, and then the one wanted to experience itself, so it became two. So we have male and female. So if we don't embrace both the male and the female to its totality, then we have imbalance, and that's what's created all imbalances, all war, all strife,
all ego side,
everything that is in the world at the moment. So if we want our vision of peace and love and the world how we want it, in harmony with nature, however we can dream it, is it's up to us. This is what we were asked to do at the Concordance last year. However we dream it, we can create that. My point of view is, well, we have male and female, we all of us have male and female, why wouldn't we want to be everything that we possibly can be?
Why would we put limitations on that?
Why would we not want to be? So to experience everything that we can be, we have to fully balance male, female within ourselves, first and foremost. And we have to express that with every relationship that we have, not just with our divine partner, but between friends, with ourselves and the animals, the ocean, the sky.
Business partners.
God, goddess, the trees, everything. We have to
Well, new respect for
that.
Nature, I think, goes without saying. We're being, our attention is going to, what are we doing to the atmosphere of our biosphere?
This is just another example of male-female being out of balance.
Yes, I think, I agree.
If we balance our male and females within, so within, so without, it will happen naturally.
I agree.
The whole world will be balanced, so then it's, the world will be what... ever we dream it into being.
Yeah, and what we're capable of dreaming, I think, is beautiful. I think what we need to let go of is that the dream has to include painful episodes that remind us of our frailty as humans. I think we all seek a certain level of drama in our lives to keep interesting, to make give a textural field, if you will, to the tapestry of our existence. If it was just all smooth and happiness, it would be like a photograph, smooth,
I'm not unaccustomed to having drama in my life, but I decided to drop that particular addiction ago because it basically didn't work. Okay, I found personally that once I stop interfering in what I believe is the truth, then what happens is that the magic comes in. And that's far more entertaining and interesting
and
fascinating
dramatic.
Than anything I could ever have dreamed up. So if we leave our perceptions of what things are going to look like way behind, then you'll get surprised.
Yeah. Love surprises.
You'll be very entertained, very enchanted, and it'll take you to places the way your imagination just couldn't have gone.
Well, part of the magic I've experienced being here 7 years is that what you're saying is indeed true. So you're here to write, or at least put together the finishing touches of a book. Is that correct?
Well, actually, this is the foundation of the book,
and the middle
parts. And the book is going to cover a lot of what we're talking about today, but also how it has an element of prophecy in it, which is something I've shied away from for 15 years.
Does it have a title or a working title?
It has a title.
Uh-huh.
Oracle.
The Oracle.
Just Oracle.
Just Oracle. Okay, well, that's enough to get my attention.
And but it's going to bring it's a look back, but it's also a look forward. But it's a real, incredibly clear and somewhat at times uncomfortable look at the now.
Okay.
So to stimulate people to grow and stimulate people to question things.
Well, anybody who's been listening to the show and is interested in learning more about Isaac and the ideas that he's put forward here and some of the opportunities that you might have to meet Isaac and Lynn in the future, they're posted on his website. Once again, that's www.isaacariel.com. And that'll get you to a whole wealth of information and added to as we go on. We'll probably, I would suspect, see some of the chapters or preliminary chapters of this new writing project to appear at some point in the future. So do keep that in mind. There'll be workshops and things that will be posted as to future events. What's the next posted event that you have on your calendar?
Well, actually, the next posted event we have coming up is a dolphin whale swim with Michael and Milena in January 16th through the 21st here in Kona, Hawaii.
Okay.
And we're also going to have a trip to the volcano and visit Madame Pele at the time. And there were always going to be, there are going to be a couple of small events that we're going to do here on the island, probably Kona Outdoor Circle, but I'm not sure exactly when those are going to be scheduled, but probably one in December, one in January.
All right.
And may have some of the same subject matter. Maybe Ariel has a different thing that she wishes to speak to. But then sometime in the early spring, there'll be a different calendar and new workshops, new information is coming forth. But basically, we're letting the relationship and forces of light, powers that be, lead us on.
Well, blessings in this new adventure, and thank you for sort of like blazing a trail into what it feels like to be in a new 21st century relationship. And whatever comes out of that, we'll be interested to follow it, and we will indeed. Thank you both for being part of Dolphinville Radio.
Yes, thank you, Doug.
Isaac George and Lynn Patterson. Stay tuned for future happenings with them and future happenings here on Dolphinville as well. I'll try to keep providing new content and interesting informational flows for anybody who's interested in the future. So this is Douglas Dolphinus here in Dolphinville saying so long, and remember, be well and swim free. I'll see you next time. This is Dolphinville Radio, brought to you by Photon.net, your internet service provider.